From camp, Jack heard the roar of the creature, followed by what sounded like Will screaming. It took only a second for him to react, grabbing his rifle and charging off in Will's direction. As he dodged trees and rocks, Jack flipped the safety off, readying his weapon. Closing the last 20 meters, he could hear the continued roar of the creature, mixed in with Will's screams of panic. Jack charged up the side of the rocks, barely noticing the creature's paw prints on the dirt at the base, and the scratch marks from his claws on the rock itself. In bounding steps, he ascended the side of the largest rock, hoping it would provide him with a vantage point from which to fire. As he crested the top of the rock, Jack's wish was granted. There, only 10 meters ahead and 4 meters below him, was his target. A monstrous, furry animal that had trapped Will face down on the ground, about to tear him apart. Jack quickly raised his weapon, jamming the rifle butt firmly against his right shoulder. Shifting the weapon slightly to line up the crosshairs, Jack depressed the trigger, firing a single round at the animal. The round struck the creature square between the shoulders, breaking through its hide and drilling deep into its muscular back. The animal reared its head backwards, twisting it to one side as if to ward off whatever had struck it from behind. But its attacker was not there. Another shot cracked through the air, announcing the next bullet, as it struck the creature in the left side of its face, shearing off a large section of its upper jaw and cheek, pulling its left eye out of the socket along with it. The creature's head snapped to the right from the kinetic energy of the bullet's impact, its right forward leg buckling from the sudden blow. Jack shot twice more, once in the left side of the creature's neck, the second slamming squarely into the base of its skull. The latter severed the creature's spinal cord, the impact causing the lower portion of the creature's head to explode outward, spraying blood and tissue to either side. The creature fell to the ground unceremoniously, landing on top of Will. The dead creature was heavy, and Will could barely breathe under its enormous weight. He tried to scream for help, but could hardly get out more than a whisper. He could hear Jack calling to him in desperation as he approached, the sound of his footsteps becoming louder as he came down from the rock and scurried the last few meters across the ground to reach him. "Are you all right?" Jack yelled.
"Get it off me,"
Will begged in a half-whisper. Jack planted his right foot firmly against the dead creature's side and gave it a good shove, rolling it off of Will to his right.
"Will, are you all right?"
Jack asked, as he reached down to help him up. Will said nothing, still speechless.
"Look at the size of this thing," Jack added. "It's huge."
"Yeah, and heavy,"
Will finally said, between pants.
"This is great," Jack added,
as he stroked his hand along the dead creature's fur.
"Feel how soft this fur is, Will. This will do very nicely."
"I was almost killed, and all you can think about is a new winter coat?"
"Come on," Jack ordered. "Help me skin this thing."
Laura was working late that evening, doing some organizing in the new genetics hut. Normally, she would have been relegated to doing her work in the lab on board the LRV, but since they had the resources of 3 survey equipment pods instead of the usual one, there were a few extra hut kits available. She was determined to finish setting up the interior of her new lab before bedtime. The lab on board the LRV, while adequate, was too cramped for her taste, and she hated sharing it with other scientists who didn't follow her same meticulous procedures. Laura nearly dropped a tray of sample tubes when she heard the noise. It was loud, nearby, maybe in the next hut over. It sounded like someone had knocked over something metal onto the floor. She set the tray down, her heartbeat only now beginning to fall from her throat back down to her chest, where it belonged. She moved toward the door of the hut, curious as to the source of the sudden disturbance. Then there was another noise. It was not as startling as the previous one, but more gradual, like a scratching of metal. Laura opened the door slowly and peeked outside. It was dark out, the inner compound of the camp lit only by the blue-white floodlights built into the side of the LRV. The sky was cloudy and overcast, allowing no more than an occasional hint of moonlight to reach the ground. She looked to the left and the right of the hut, seeing nothing out of the ordinary. She headed to the right, guessing that the noise was coming from the storage hut toward the back of the camp. Another crash. But from behind her this time. Laura spun around. It must be coming from the ag hut, she thought. Then another crash, like a wire rack bouncing off the aluminum decking that covered the floor of the ag hut. Laura pulled down her mic.
Lynn, she whispered. Lynn, this is Laura. Do you copy?
Go ahead, Laura,
Lynn's voice responded, moments later.
Is Sarah inside?
Affirmative. Why, do you need her?
There are strange noises coming from the ag hut, like there's something in there,
Laura explained, in a whisper.
Stay put,
Lynn ordered.
We're on our way.
Mac, Tony,
Lynn bellowed from the corridor entrance at the front of the wardroom.
We've got trouble. Move it!
Tony froze in mid-pull on the resistance gym, looking at Mac for a brief second. Mac jumped from his stretching, running forward. Tony released the lat pull bar, letting it fall with a loud clang as he jumped up to follow Mac. When they got down to the EVA bay, they found Lynn breaking out rifles and ammo.
Laura reports noises coming from the ag hut, she told them, as she slapped a magazine into a rifle and handed it to Mac. Like something's moving around inside there.
Lynn handed another loaded rifle to Tony. Laura hadn't heard another clang in over a minute. The silence was making her even more curious, and she found herself inexplicably drawn toward the door of the ag hut, despite Lynn's orders to stay put. She listened intently as she reached for the door, pulling it open, slowly and silently. Peering inside, she saw nothing near the door itself and slipped quietly through, her curious nature as a scientist overriding any sense of caution and self-preservation. Laura stood still for a moment, looking around the hut. A table was knocked over. A bag of seeds was torn open and strewn across the aluminum deck, most having fallen through the deck onto the bare ground below. Several plants were torn out of their pots, their leaves ripped from their stalks, and scattered on the floor. Suddenly, she heard a strange grunting sound to her left, beyond the vertically stacked racks of wheat plants Sarah was cultivating. She listened a moment more. It sounded like an animal, eating, smacking its lips, and grunting as it chewed its meal. Lynn hit the ground running at the bottom of the ramp, her weapon held high, with Mac and Tony hot on her heels. They circled around to the left of the LRV's nose, expecting to see Laura standing out in the open near the ship's tail, across from the ag hut. But she wasn't there. Mac was also quick to notice that Laura was gone. He reached forward and grabbed Lynn's jacket, pulling her back and to the side to take cover with him. She obviously had no tactical training and was going to walk right up to whatever was making all the noise.
What are you doing?
Lynn sputtered, nearly falling over.
What were you planning to do, Lynn? Walk up to it and ask us some questions?
Mac looked across to Tony. He was tucked against the LRV, directly across from them. He motioned for Tony to move forward. Mac pulled Lynn around behind him and trained his weapon on the ag hut entrance to provide cover for Tony. Tony ran forward a few meters to his next hiding place, staying low along the way. Once he was hidden again, he trained his own weapon on the ag hut and motioned for Mac to come forward. Mac raised the barrel of his rifle, pointing it skyward as he ran a few meters past Tony, ducking into another hiding place. Laura moved to her left, stepping carefully so as not to alert the intruder of her presence. She could feel her heartbeat climbing up into her throat, her respirations quickening as adrenaline surged into her bloodstream. She rounded the first stack of wheat racks and found nothing. She rounded the next stack, only to find a rack on its side a few meters down the row. She was about to move past the next and last row when she noticed something just beyond the fallen stack a few meters in front of her. Something blue and shiny. Blue, shiny, and moving. It has hair. Long, blue, shiny hair on the head of some animal moving back and forth, bobbing up and down as it grunted and chewed and slurped. She took a careful step forward, crossing over a knee-high barrel lying on its side in her path. Laura tried to control her breath, allowing only the slightest and slowest breaths in and out, trying to remain silent. She could see the creature's head and shoulders, at least the back of them. It had a shape similar to a humanoid, skull, neck, shoulder girdle, even ears. It was covered with the same shiny blue hair, long and luxurious on its head, shorter on its body. It looked small, much smaller than a human, as it hunched over an open bag of seeds, consuming them by the handful.
The hands, she thought. 4 fingers and a thumb.
Laura?
Lynn's voice whispered over the comm set. But it was enough. The creature spun its head around, spying Laura as she stood there, her mouth hanging open in amazement. It looked at her for a moment, its head cocked oddly to one side as it examined her, trying to decide if she was a threat.
Laura?
Lynn's voice repeated more urgently. Something about the squawking of the comm set made the creature nervous. Its mouth opened, revealing long, fang-like teeth as its mouth tightened up into a snarl. A low growl began to emanate from deep in the creature's throat, and its eyes narrowed, becoming more sinister as it sized up its opponent. Laura began to back away as the creature stood up. It was not nearly as small as she had first imagined, standing well over 2 meters when it rose to its fully erect position, its large chest expanding as it spread its arms into an aggressive stance. Laura backed away quickly. Forgetting about the barrel behind her, she fell backwards, landing on her back with a scream, her lower leg still draped over the barrel. Suddenly, the door to the hut flew open, and Mac's large, muscular form sprang through with astonishing speed and agility. Tony came in behind him, fading to the right, opposite from Mac. The sudden intrusion startled the creature, causing it to dive at Laura instinctively. She screamed as the creature landed on top of her, its strong hands pinning her shoulders to the deck in its claw-like grasp. She shrieked as several razor-sharp claws penetrated her skin and dug deep into her upper chest and shoulder. Mac heard Laura's screams and leapt into action, swinging around the far end of the racks, searching for her. 2 rows over, he spotted them, locked in a life-and-death struggle as she tried to hold the creature at bay. Mac sprinted a few steps down the passage, leaping over the fallen rack, and diving through the air in a flying tackle, knocking the creature off of her. Laura screamed out in pain as one of the creature's long claws ripped open her shoulder as it was knocked off her. Mac rolled around on the deck with the creature, holding its snapping jaws away from his face as he struggled to reach his knife. Tony came around the corner next, jumping over Laura to get to Mac and the animal, which now held the superior position, sitting on top of Mac, pinning him to the deck. He reached around the creature's neck with his right arm, putting it in a chokehold as he tried to pull it off of Mac. That was all the help Mac needed. In that brief instant, while the creature's attention switched away from him, Mac pulled his knife from its sheath at his hip and shoved the long blade deep into the creature's abdomen. The beast let out an ear-splitting howl as Mac twisted the knife around in its gut, then drew it upwards, slicing it wide open. It lurched, its body in spasm as its guts spilled out all over Mac's torso. Finally, the creature went limp in Tony's chokehold, a long, grumbling sigh coming from its open mouth as it took its last breath. Lynn entered the room and was hovering over Laura, shielding her from the battle as it ended.
"Medical emergency in the Ag Hut!"
Lynn bellowed over her comset as she laid Laura down carefully on the deck, blood spurting from her gaping shoulder wound. Tony dropped the creature's dead carcass to the side, reaching out to help Mac to his feet.
"You okay?"
"Yeah, thanks."
Mac rose and looked at the dark brownish-red blood and alien tissue splattered all over his torso.
"Oh, yuck! This shit stinks!"
Lynn quickly pulled her coat off, wadding it up and pressing it over Laura's wound in an attempt to slow down her bleeding.
"Give me a hand. She's hurt,"
Lynn called to them. Tony turned and stepped over to help, straightening Laura's legs out and using his own jacket to keep her warm. Mac watched in horror. Laura looked pale, almost white. There was a huge pool of blood spilling out of her shoulder, flowing down through the deck and onto the ground below. Maria arrived a minute later, having run all the way, with her med kit in hand. Sarah and Adia were right behind her, hauling whatever medical gear Maria had instructed them to carry. Maria immediately went to work, placing an oxygen mask on Laura's face and starting an intravenous line through which to replace her missing fluid volume.
"We've got to get her back to the med lab," she ordered. Her subclavian vein is severed. If I don't close it up quickly, she'll bleed out. Mac, Tony, Lynn snapped. Get her to the med lab.
Maria looked up, seeing the strange dark blood covering Mac's legs.
Whoa,
she barked, noticing the dead creature in the corner.
Is that stuff on you from that thing?
She asked. Adia gasped, as did Sarah, when they noticed the lifeless creature lying on the deck, only 2 meters away from them.
What is that thing?
Adia asked, in horror.
That's the same creature I saw in the woods in that valley,
Mac realized.
Tony, you get any on you?
Maria interrupted. Tony looked himself over.
I don't think so. Okay, you carry Laura back to the med lab.
Yes, ma'am,
Tony agreed, as he stepped forward and picked her up.
And you, Maria barked at Mac. Don't set foot inside the ship until you've been decontaminated,
she added, as she followed Tony out the door, with Lynn and Adia carrying her medical gear.
Don't worry, Sarah promised. I'll hose him down.
Several hours later, Jack and Will returned to camp, carrying the creature's furry hide and several kilograms of what looked to be the best cuts of meat it had to offer. Using the experience he'd accumulated on their journey thus far, Will cooked up some of the meat for dinner, using various herbs and roots that he hoped would help to tenderize the meat and bring out its natural flavors. Meanwhile, Jack set to work preparing the rest of the meat for preservation as jerky. After dinner, they both went to work cleaning the inside of the creature's hide of blood and tissue, determined to craft some sort of protection against the coming winter. Before bed, Will continued his nightly ritual of flute practice, filling the night air with half-completed melodies. Jack wrapped the rest of the meat in a bag and strung it up from a tree branch, well removed from the camp, where, hopefully, no animals could get to it during the night. They had decided to stay put for another day or two, long enough to turn the meat into jerky and fashion something of use from the fur of the creature that had nearly taken Will's life.
You know, Jack returned from securing the bag of meat, that almost sounds like a melody.
Will stopped playing and lowered his flute to his lap.
Really?
He asked, stunned at Jack's comment.
Yeah, the style sounds sort of familiar.
I was trying to come up with something catchy, but not too complex, so it would be easy for me to remember the fingerings.
Play a little bit more of it, Jack urged.
Will lifted the flute to his lips and began. A lilting, albeit slightly sloppy song emerged from the flute as Will's fingers fumbled to find the notes. The melody was haunting, leaping from low to high pitches in slow, methodical patterns. Occasionally, Will would slur notes together, whether it was on purpose or by accident, Jack wasn't sure, giving the tune a magical effect. There was a warmth to this live performance, one that he never would have envisioned. Will ended the tune with a slight trilling of the last note before resting his flute in his lap once again, awaiting Jack's response.
That was beautiful, Will, Jack praised.
Thank you. I still need a lot of practice, though.
It has sort of a Scottish feel to it, Jack decided.
Not surprising, Will agreed. Abby likes to listen to old Scottish folk music. I'm sure it influenced the composition.
Will thought for a moment.
Perhaps we can claim it of Setian origin.
The first Setian tune,
Jack smiled.
Not a bad idea, Will.
A feeling of satisfaction swept over Will as he returned to his practice. And now, more than ever, he wanted to continue playing late into the night.
How's Laura?
Lynn asked, as Maria entered the LRV's wardroom.
She's fine. She'll be out of commission for a while, but she's got a good chance at a full recovery. I'm just worried about infection, Maria said.
What about antibiotics? Lynn asked.
She's on them, Maria assured her. But we really don't know if they work against infectious organisms on this world.
Maria sighed.
We'll just have to wait and see. To be honest, I'm just as worried about the crew.
The crew?
Lynn's expression changed to one of concern.
Everyone is now carrying a gun on their hip. Even Adia. They're just playing it safe, Maria,
Lynn comforted her.
I suppose you're right.
It's just scary to see everyone carrying weapons. Well, you'd better get used to it. We're down to 7, and I don't intend to lose anyone else.
8, Maria corrected.
What?
There are still 8 of us left, not 7.
7, Lynn insisted.
Frank's not dead, Lynn. He's just gone for a while.
If Frank wants to go solo on us, that's fine, but until he returns, we're down to 7.
6, until Laura recovers.
Lynn rose from the table without another word and headed for her berth. Maria said nothing else to her as she left the table. She knew Lynn felt deeply betrayed by Frank's departure. But she also knew that doing something to help Jack, if indeed he and Will were alive, was something Frank needed to do.
Day 52. We spent most of the morning building a sort of solar oven in which to dry our meat to preserve it. The temperatures are much lower in the higher elevations, and without the makeshift oven, drying the meat would take days. It was difficult, but the first batch came out fine. We will finish the rest tomorrow. Following the instructions in the survival guide, we spent the rest of the day cutting the creature's hide into patterns to be assembled into coats. We will begin stitching the pieces together tomorrow morning, after getting our next batch of meat in the drying oven. The idea of trying to survive the cold mountain winter worries me, despite Jack's assurances that the creature's fur will provide us with enough protection. Although he is unlikely to admit it, I suspect the approaching colder weather worries Jack as well. He is obsessed with the making of coats, as if it were a matter of life or death. I just hope the one hide will be enough.
Laura was up and about by lunchtime, growing bored, lying in her tiny berthing compartment. She felt pretty good, all things considered, although there was a nagging nausea in the pit of her stomach that refused to subside, no matter what she did. With Adia's assistance, she examined some of the tissue samples from the autopsy of the creature that had attacked her. Work, she hoped, might take her mind off her nausea.
"It doesn't make any sense," Laura complained, as she stared at the display screen.
It was the 5th sample she had looked at so far, and it revealed the same puzzling phenomenon as the previous 4.
"What is it?"
Adia asked.
"I'm not sure. Every sample I've looked at shows signs of mutation."
"Isn't mutation of DNA common?" Adia wondered.
"Yes, but in every sample? The skin, the hair, the heart, the muscles, everywhere I look, I find mutations. Some of them are very small, yes, but there nonetheless."
"What do you think would cause such widespread mutations?" Adia wondered.
"Radiation?"
"I don't think so. Radiation would destroy cells as well as mutate them. These mutations appear to have changed the creature."
"So it isn't the same as its parent, assuming it had one."
"No, I mean it has been changed," Laura explained. "Whatever this thing is, it's not the same thing it was when it was born."
Day 53. Jack finally came to the conclusion that it would take us more than a day or two to finish crafting winter apparel out of the creature's hide. So today we packed up camp and continued on our journey, with the hides dangling from our backs. The good news is that we have plenty of what Jack calls monster jerky. The bad news is, although flavorful, the stuff is tough as hell. I believe it is more suited to serve as boot soles than a food source. Nevertheless, our packs are stuffed with enough to get us through several weeks without having to kill any more of this world's inhabitants. We climbed higher into the mountains, following the natural trails formed by the converging slopes. We have seen evidence of migration trails as well, and in many cases have been able to use such paths to our advantage. Using the orbital scan images stored in his data pad, Jack is usually able to estimate our position with reasonable accuracy. He believes we are only a few kilometers from a large river into which many smaller tributaries flow. With luck, one of them will lead us up to the summit. At the very least, it will keep us near fresh water.
Laura knelt at the toilet bowl, hugging its cool metal sides. She had spent much of the early morning in this same position, wishing she had taken it easy, as Maria advised.
She had been consumed with her work on the dead alien's strange DNA. Oscar, the name Adia had chosen for referring to the dead creature, had provided her with a wealth of intrigue, enough to fill the careers of a dozen geneticists. It was early, and except for Lynn, who was probably up on the flight deck going over the day's itinerary, Laura was the only one awake. She finally managed to push herself away from the toilet and pull up to her feet, clinging to the metal rail along the wall. She stood there for a moment, her head spinning, fighting back the urge to vomit yet again. She succeeded, and strolled clumsily over to the counter to wash her face. One look in the mirror confirmed her fear that she looked as bad as she felt. The water on her face was cool and refreshing as she splashed it up from the basin with her hands. She ran her wet hands back across her forehead and over her messy hair. She paused a moment to look at herself in the mirror again. "When did I get this gray?" she wondered. She looked closer, leaning forward as she held out a clump of hair that seemed to have a lot of gray in it. But it wasn't gray. What the hell? She looked again. The hair wasn't gray. It was more of a blue-gray. After an unsuccessful attempt to get her hair in order, she finally gave up and left the bathroom. Moments later, she was standing at the foot of Maria's berth.
"Maria, are you awake?" she whispered, hoping not to wake the others.
"Huh?" Maria's voice came from the other side of the curtain, still groggy from sleep.
"What is it?" "Maria, it's me, Laura."
Laura looked around to be sure that no one was listening.
"I don't feel well."
Laura stepped away from the foot of Maria's berth, leaning against the resistance gym in the center of the compartment. Her head was still spinning, and her body felt weak. Maria's curtain slid open, and Maria scooted off the foot of her bunk, pulling her pants on as she stepped out.
"Jesus, Laura,"
Maria exclaimed as she got her first look at her.
"You look terrible."
"Thanks," she responded, with a half-hearted smile.
"What's wrong?"
Maria asked, as she put her arm around her for support, while leading her off toward the med lab.
"I don't know. I've been vomiting for the last hour," she explained, gesturing back toward the bathroom at the aft end of the compartment. "Let's get you to the med lab, huh?"
"Where's Laura?" Tony asked later that morning, as he sat down for breakfast next to Adia.
"She's in the med lab with Maria," Lynn explained. "She's not feeling well."
"Really? What's wrong with her?"
"A little nausea, I think."
"Probably nothing," she said dismissively.
"What's for breakfast?" Mac inquired as he entered the room.
"I don't know," Tony responded. "Ask your girlfriend over there. She's got the breakfast duty."
"Oh, shit," Mac said under his breath. "Maybe I'll stick to bread and tea this morning."
"I heard that," Sarah yelled from the galley. "Sit down and shut up, mister. Breakfast will be ready in a moment."
Tony smiled.
"You never learn, do you?"
Sarah entered, carrying a large platter full of food.
"Breakfast is served," she announced, as she set the plate down in the center of the table. "Wow, that smells great," Lynn exclaimed.
"Yeah, it does," Mac admitted with astonishment. "What is it?"
"Scrambled powdered eggs with peppers and onions, fried protein strips, and bran muffins," Sarah announced proudly. "Dig in."
"Bran muffins?" Tony asked, surprised. "Where'd you learn how to make bran muffins?"
"Laura gave me the recipe," she admitted.
"More like bran rocks," Mac joked, as he tapped one of the harder ones against the table.
He looked up after he finished his joke, a smile spread across his face. It was met with a stern look from Sarah.
"But tasty,"
Mac lied, as he forcefully tore the muffin in half and stuffed it in his mouth.
"Mmm."
"Don't listen to him, Sarah," Lynn told her. "This is great," she assured her, as she took a bite of eggs. "Oh, don't worry," Sarah promised as she sat down. "I never listen to him."
"Ain't that the truth?"
Mac agreed, still chewing the muffin. Suddenly, an alarm sounded at full volume. Within a millisecond, the computer recognized the location signature of the alarm activation, and a synthetic, computerized voice announced the origin of the distress.
"Emergency! Med lab!" the voice repeated over and over.
Lynn jumped from her seat and ran out of the wardroom.
The others quickly followed, their tableware clanging against their plates as they dropped what they were doing to respond to the distress call.
Lynn burst into the med lab, stopping dead in her tracks, at the sight of Laura lying unconscious on the exam table in the center of the small compartment. Maria was next to her, placing defibrillation electrode pads on Laura's bare chest. She then turned to face the cardiac monitor.
"Stand clear!"
Maria glanced about to ensure no one was touching her patient, then pressed the shock button. Laura's body twitched when the electrical energy entered her body.
Lynn gasped.
"What happened?"
Tony was next to enter, with Sarah and the others right behind him.
"Stand clear!"
Maria ordered as she delivered another shock. She looked over her shoulder at the others assembling in the corner of the compartment, mouths agape.
"Let's go, people! She's coded!"
Maria knew everyone on board had at least basic medical training.
"Tony, spike a line. Sarah, drug kit. Mac, start compressions. Adia, prep me an IV site. AC, right arm."
Everyone jumped into action, rushing to their assigned tasks, struggling to remember the procedures they had been taught back on the Daedalus. Lynn stood against the wall by the doorway, watching in horror as her crew scrambled to help their friend.
"What happened?"
Mac asked, as he started chest compressions.
"I have no idea,"
Maria admitted, as she passed an endotracheal tube down into Laura's mouth and between her vocal cords.
"She woke me up about an hour ago, said she wasn't feeling good." "Drug kit is ready, right side,"
Sarah reported. Maria pulled the laryngoscope out of Laura's mouth, dropping it next to her head.
"I brought her in here and was working her up,"
she continued, as she inflated the cuff at the end of the tube that sealed it against the inside of Laura's trachea.
"Labs, physical, the works. Sarah, ventilator for me."
Sarah stepped over next to Maria at Laura's head, picked up the ambubag, and attached the end of the tube. She gave it a firm squeeze, sending oxygen down the tube, as Maria listened to Laura's lungs with a stethoscope.
"Again,"
Maria commanded. Sarah squeezed the bag again.
"One more time."
Maria listened to Laura's stomach to ensure the tube had not been accidentally placed in her esophagus.
"Tube's good," she announced. "Hold it tight and keep ventilating her. Every third or fourth chest compression." "Line is ready,"
Tony announced. Maria turned her eyes to the monitor display on the wall.
"Hold compressions."
The tracing was dancing up and down in a wild, irregular pattern. At the top of the monitor, it read V-fib.
"Stand clear,"
Maria ordered. She glanced around Laura's still body, checking that everyone was clear, before pressing the shock button again. Laura's body twitched again. A sick feeling shot through Mac, settling in his belly. He looked up at the monitor. It still read V-fib.
"IV side is ready,"
Adia reported. Maria quickly moved over to Laura's right side. As Mac continued chest compressions and Sarah continued ventilations, Maria expertly inserted the IV catheter into Laura's right antecubital vein.
"Secure this IV, will you, Adia?"
"Yes, ma'am."
"Tony, connect the IV line to the drug kit input port,"
Maria instructed, as she connected the other end of the tube running from the IV catheter to the output port on the drug kit. She pressed a couple buttons on the kit, causing it to beep several times in several different pitches and patterns. She glanced at the IV bag, noting that the fluid appeared to be flowing from the bag into the drug kit. She then checked that fluid was also flowing from the drug kit to her patient.
"Good access," she announced.
"Administering first round of meds," she added, touching several more buttons on the drug kit. Lynn continued watching as the others worked in unison, following Maria's every command without hesitation. She had been given minimal time to complete the basic first aid course before departure, and she barely understood what was going on. But she could tell by the looks on their faces and the increasing desperation in Maria's voice that it was not going well. She looked down at Laura's pale face as Mac continued to compress her chest in a rhythmic fashion. Laura appeared so lifeless, without emotion or expression. Laura was the most animated woman she had ever met, but now her face looked as if it were carved from stone. Lynn struggled to believe what was happening. At any moment, she expected Maria to announce that everything was going to be all right and Laura was going to be fine. But with every new drug that the drug kit introduced, that hope slipped further and further away. They weren't even shocking her anymore. Lynn looked down at Laura again. There was blood oozing from her ears and nose. Her lips were mottled and gray. Her half-open eyes were cloudy, devoid of life. She looked to her right at Adia, who was near tears. She looked at Mac, dripping with sweat, as he chugged away like a locomotive, delivering constant regular chest compressions. She could see the determination in his eyes. Lynn looked at the monitors behind her. It was reporting asystole. The rest of the biomonitor's readings showed nothing but flat lines and zeros.
"Okay, okay,"
Maria stammered in frustration, desperately searching for the one thing she had not done that would bring her friend back to her.
"Maria?" Tony said in a soft, compassionate voice.
Maria was silent, her hands resting on both sides of her face, staring at her lost friend.
"You did everything you could," Tony assured her.
Mac looked at Tony and then back at Maria. He wasn't sure what to do, so he just kept on pumping on Laura's chest, his arms held rigid as they drove down again and again. The room was silent for a moment, with only the sounds of Mac's chest compressions and Sarah's ventilations.
"Shit!"
Maria yelled, momentarily losing control. She closed her eyes tight for a moment as they welled up with tears. She sniffled once, then opened her eyes and looked at the digital clock on the wall.
"Time of death."
She sniffled again, barely able to control her emotions.
"Time of death. 0847,
she finally said, in a barely audible whisper. She then turned and left the med lab, without saying another word. Mac stopped his compressions, and Sarah stopped her ventilations. The room suddenly became frighteningly quiet. They stood there for a moment, each of them afraid to look the others in the eyes. Finally, Lynn looked around for someone to tell her what had happened, what had gone wrong, and what to do. Tony was the first one to take action, reaching up and shutting off the monitors, the oxygen, and the IV line. Finally, he pulled the sheet up over Laura's face.
"Goodbye, Laura," he said softly. "We'll miss you."